and welcome to episode 49 of Cavalytics. Cavalytics is a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. I am Keith Carter, a displaced Clevelander but lifelong Cavs fan. My co-host is Arnav Chabra, a graduate student at MIT and an expert in NBA advanced analytics. Speaking of MIT, Arnav, did you see what the hackathon topic is at Sloan this year?
I didn't. What is it?
This is what it says. So the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference, did it start today or does it start yesterday or something?
On Thursday. It starts Thursday, I think, so tomorrow. Okay.
I don't know if it's the only, but it's, if it's not the only, it's the premier sports analytics conference. It's held at MIT every year, and Arnav and I went last year, but
is represented, right?
Every NBA team was represented last year. There were like every baseball and NBA team was, and there were a few football teams that weren't, but they all go. And the day before the conference, they do this programming hackathon thing. And the topic last year was NFL data visualization or something, which we considered doing the hackathon, but we didn't know what the topic was going to be until we decided we weren't going to do it for some, I don't know why we decided. But anyway, if we knew the topic, we definitely would have did it, would not have done it. Anyway, the topic this year is measuring the immeasurable. Sports analytics is often criticized for ignoring intangibles such as chemistry, leadership, heart, and instinct. Participants in the hackathon will be asked to start pushing back on that by clearly defining and then measuring an aspect of on-court performance that was previously talked about as an intangible attribute. Participants will utilize basketball player tracking data to facilitate their measurement and will be judged on completeness of their definition, measurement approach, and results of their process. That's all it says. Yeah, it's very interesting. Do you think they have SportsVU data access?
Probably, right?
Yeah. I mean, that would be really awesome. That's like, that topic is like tailor-made for you and I. That would have been really fun to do.
Right. If you have the SportsVU data, you can look at sort of quote-unquote effort-based possessions, you know, where like someone gets a deflection or, you know, runs the court.
Yeah,
for transition defense or something like that. Yeah.
I mean, without that, you're just basically trying to better RPM, which is as Daryl Morey, who is the Rockets GM and I think founder of the Sloan Conference, thinks is the greatest thing to ever come out of Sloan. So they're basically saying like, oh, can you better RPM? That's the theme. But right. If you have SportsVU data, I think you probably could.
Right. What did you think of this game?
I thought that was interesting. Yeah, so the game tonight, the Cavs lost to the Celtics 103-99. I thought this was probably the third best regular season game, the Cavs. Third most compelling, yeah.
Wizards was number one.
Yeah.
Wizards and Golden State, I think, one and two.
Yeah,
and
then Christmas this Day, one. Golden State, yeah. And I think this was the third best, I guess,
I agree.
Whatever the your sort of subjective metric.
2-1 so far in compelling games, which is good, I guess.
Yeah, I guess there were 18 ties and 24 lead changes. The last three scoring possessions for the Celtics were two Avery Bradley threes and an Isaiah Thomas three. On the two
that
Avery
last three by Isaiah Thomas was pretty disappointing.
Yeah, it was.
They called a timeout, right? And then the Cavs subbed in their defense-only guys.
Yep.
And one of them was Iman Shumpert. Mm-hmm. For the life of me, I don't understand why people think he's a good defender. He hasn't shown any... Well, okay, he used to be a good defender like a couple of years ago, but since his wrist injury and his groin injury, he hasn't shown any signs of playing solid defense. And he's not that smart when he's on that side of the court. He got over a couple of screens, but the final screen that got Isaiah Thomas free on that possession, he went under that screen and he got caught up and he had a wide open three, which, you know, he's not going to miss.
I was frustrated also. So, yeah, I want to talk about Shumpert in a second, like 15 seconds from now. But in the next 13 seconds, what I want to say is that on the previous two possessions where Avery Bradley made threes, the Cavs double teamed Thomas even off the ball. And then he passed to Avery Bradley and he made an open three because he was basically uncovered. And then on the last possession, they didn't double Thomas. I think they should have doubled Thomas again at the end because, they're going to try to go to him. And Shumpert couldn't stay with him. And that was that.
Yeah, he got stuck on that screen and didn't come off. I'm so excited for JR to be back. Like, he may not be some, like, he's not a defensive lockdown player or anything, but at least he'll make some shots on the other side, and he'll at least put some effort on that end. I think from what I've seen over the last year and a half, he's gotten much better.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I'm hoping for or expecting. Well, I know what I'm hoping for out of JR. I don't know what is reasonable to expect. I mean, I don't think he can get to where he was last year.
Yeah, I think that's too much to ask, especially in the regular season. Maybe over time, as the Cavs go through the playoffs, he'll get there, right. But I don't see it. The silver lining here is that his knee was bothering him the entire time. So now he's had it. You know what, 3 months of rest on his knee, or two months of rest on his knee. So.
Right. Yeah, that's a sort of silver lining of the Love injury as well. He had the exactly. Nagging back stuff going on, and by taking off, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, he's going to get that sorted out. Couple other interesting things about tonight. Tonight was Deron Williams' debut. How'd you think he played?
It was okay from like a passing perspective, but I think for the most part, he had no idea what the plays were. So right. he ISO'd a lot in the first quarter, if I remember correctly, yes. A couple of step backs, which obviously, like, I don't think he wants to do. It's just a question of he had no idea what anyone else was doing. So on offense, so he ended up just taking the possession into his own hands. Defensively, yeah, he leaves a lot to be desired in general, but I think we knew that coming into this.
Yeah, I think he's better defensively than he played tonight. But yeah, I mean, he's not Gary Payton.
He's not going to be able to keep up with quick guys like, you know, especially like Isaiah Thomas. But he's pretty big and strong. So like guys that try to body him up, they probably won't get anywhere. So
right. Yeah, I think he can, you know, at least do something against someone like Marcus Smart or, you know, some of these bigger off guards. We'll just have to see. What they do with him. I mean, he played a ton of minutes. He played 24 minutes. Part of that's because Kyrie got into early foul trouble. But hopefully part of that is he's going to get a lot of minutes, which should be good for Kyrie and, you know, having him nice and rested for the playoffs.
I wasn't happy about him getting minutes at the end for defense possessions.
Yes.
Mostly because we know he's not a good defender, so there's no point in having him. But I think Lou was sort of just experimenting, and they don't really care that much about this game, to be honest with you. So they were just trying. There were so many different things that didn't make a lot of sense. But
yeah, the Cavs' final minute of regulation lineup was some combination of LeBron James, Tristan Thompson, Kyrie Irving, Deron Williams, and then they seemed to switch Korver and Shumpert depending on whether they were on offense or defense. But the Deron Williams thing was weird because, it's his first time. But on the final important possession of the game, so Isaiah Thomas had made his three. The Cavs were down two. LeBron had the ball at the top of the three-point line. And he had an opportunity to drive. And instead, he passed to Deron Williams for a wide-open corner three. Do you think that was the right play there?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the problem with driving in these close-game situations is you typically won't get a foul call.
Yep,
and these guys are going to collapse hard. So, I mean, either way, it would have been a corner three to someone. And I don't think Korver in on the other side? I don't remember correctly. But either way, Deron was wide open. I mean, that's the
shot. He was wide open. Yeah, I agree.
Ideally, like, it would have been Korver there, but it's fine. Deron was there. And I'll take that shot. I'm perfectly fine with it.
I completely agree. I thought you would agree, but I thought I would ask anyway. So, yeah, it's a bummer Deron Williams didn't make it. If he would have made it, that would have been a nice sort of
ending to sort of a subpar start, let's put it that way.
Yeah, his final box score was 2 of 8 from the field, 0 of 2 from 3, 2 assists, 2 rebounds, no turnovers, and he was plus 4 while he was on the floor.
Wait, really?
It's interesting. Irving was minus 11. Yeah.
Either way, I don't think it means that much. He wasn't that good, but that's expected, especially on offense. Like, he's not going to know what these guys are running.
Yeah. Do you have concern about Boston as we head down the stretch and, you know, look at them as probably, they'll probably finish as the 2 seed in the East. So after this game, the Cavs are, the Cavs are 41-18 and the Celtics are 39-22. So the Celtics are 4 back in the loss column. They have 2 more games played than the Cavs. So first question. Do you think Boston can catch? Well, do you think Boston will catch the Cavs?
I don't think so. But I think there's a greater than, you know, 10% chance they will. I think there's like a 20-ish percent chance they will.
Yeah.
The only reason I think that, it's not because I think they're better than us or they can end up playing better than us, but I think it's because the Cavs have the second hardest schedule in the Eastern Conference, or strength of schedule for this finish here.
The Cavs have a bunch of games in March. I can't remember what the numbers are.
They have seven back-to-backs to finish the years in March and April. Yeah. And then they have, I think, the most games on the road. I think they have 15 games on the road. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, the Cavs didn't play much in the first half relative to other teams. I think it's because maybe something with the backloading of the national TV schedule or something, or maybe just bad luck. But yeah, okay, so the Cavs have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 more games in March.
Right.
That's a lot. So, okay, 16
games in Feb.
Right.
I know
right.
It's a few fewer days, but still, like, 16 versus 11 is a lot.
Yeah. So the Cavs, LeBron played 40 minutes tonight. Of the remaining 16 games in March, how many do you think LeBron will play?
They probably skip one or two.
They have.
He skipped, I think, one in Feb.
They have five back-to-backs in March.
I'll go with two, actually. I think he'll skip two of them.
Yeah, five back-to-backs. That's pretty brutal. They have a back-to-back where they come home against Philly, where they come home against Washington, and then all the other ones are back-to-backs on the road, which are just brutal.
Yeah, he's not going to miss the home ones. I think he likes to play at home, especially on back-to-backs.
Yeah. Okay, so you think of the 16 games, he'll play 14, and do you think they'll do anything to get his minutes per game down?
If it happens, I don't think they'll actively try to do it, but if it happens inadvertently, because, you know, if Darren Williams and, like, these other guys playing well, yeah.
Right.
I think it'll go down, and it's not going to be 40 minutes. I think, realistically speaking, it'll be close to 36, 37. Which, again, isn't ideal. We've talked about this before, but it is what it is.
Yeah, we've talked about this plenty. I think the party line has been, I know the party line has been that they were going to start trying to ratchet down his minutes in March, but so far, not so good on that front.
If JR comes back next week, then there's a chance, right?
Yeah.
But if he has another setback, or if he's, you know, a week late.
Right. Did you see the video the Cavs tweeted of JR shooting?
Him practicing? Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he looks to be healthy and stuff. I think it's just a matter of getting his conditioning back up. So,
yeah.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
So one thing that Tyronn Lue has been preaching, at least, is that the Cavs have essentially cut down on practices. So that's why he is able to play LeBron higher minutes in the regular season, is because they're not having as many practices as other teams. What do you think about that? First, do you believe that? And second, if you believe it, do you think that helps at all?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I believe it.
But let's say you believe it. Do you think?
Okay, yeah, let's say I believe it. No, I think it hurts. I think practice time is more valuable than on-court time in terms of building habits.
A few games, I would say, otherwise, but yeah, most of the regular season, I agree. Like, you know, some close games, it's important to get those reps in.
Yes.
But yeah, like most of, like, the first and second quarter, there's nothing, like, these guys are playing pretty freely. There's not much going on there. Like, him playing heavy minutes in first and second quarters isn't really helping anyone.
Yeah, I obviously playing real NBA opponents and getting some practice doing that is important. And there's some amount of chemistry and habitualizing of good patterns that happens that can only happen in playing games. But I think LeBron's leading the NBA in minutes, and he was the oldest player on the All-Star team. Actually, Carmelo was, right? Didn't Carmelo end up making the All-Star team?
Yeah, he did. He was
all right, fine. So LeBron was the second oldest player on the All-Star team. Like, he doesn't need more reps on the floor. He knows how to play basketball. Now, getting some of these new guys integrated is important, but for example, Deron Williams is going to spend most of his minutes with LeBron James off the floor anyway. So, yeah, I just don't think...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it would be better to play... Whatever. We talk about this every podcast. It probably gets boring. But yeah, I think it would be better if he played less minutes and they practiced more. And I'm sorry to hear that he said that. That's irritating.
Okay.
Do you feel differently or do you agree with that?
No, I think I mostly agree. I think
it's hard to know.
It's better than practicing and playing in heavy minutes.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I agree with that.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is what he's doing right now by cutting down the practices, that's at least better than practicing him and playing him heavy minutes, if that makes sense. But if you're going to pick one of those two, I would rather pick him than going heavier on their practices than
in-game. Like an example of something that I would like to see them do more of is figure out ways to integrate Kyle Korver where he doesn't have to run around four screens to get an open shot. So he didn't play particularly well tonight, but he didn't get a bunch of wide open shots. And I think
most of them were just him running around, actually.
Right. And I think that there's like a secret to unlock, which is Korver getting good open looks without having to run around all over the place. And I think that they could practice that and get better at it. But if they're just, you know, in chill mode during practice, then that's hard to do.
And also I think a lot of that requires them to defend well and play in transition. So once he gets steals, you can run out and then Korver can get set up before the defense is there. Korver is, he's not that hard to guard if you're phase guarding him. But the advantage for us, the other team phase guarding him, is that it essentially takes away a help defender, right?
Right. So that makes it LeBron or Irving drive.
Right. So Korver has a lot of sort of secondary effects, which you may not see if you just look at the box score. But he usually does. So like even if you look at, I think LeBron and Korver were like plus 23 in the month of Feb. Something ridiculous like that. So
that's very, very, very good.
Right. I'd also like to see him start. I'm done with the Shumpert experiment. The idea has always been that there's a lot of offense in the starting lineup anyway, so we may as well bring defense. But Shumpert is not defending that well, so there's no point in playing him.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that Korver can be particularly effective in lineups without LeBron or Irving in them anyway.
Exactly.
I would start Korver and, you know, try to get out to big leads. You know, have an offense that's, you know, scores 115 points per 100 possessions or something. That would be really
nice. That's
also
the problem, right? Like they only sort of locked down defensively for one quarter and that was the last one. And they could have pulled it out. But again, like you're playing an away team on their home court when the crowd is really loud. That generally, in a close game, will swing the favor in the home team's direction. So ideally, what you want to do is get out to big leads in the beginning when the crowd is not into the game.
Yeah. Yeah. Tonight's game, I would say my concern is like a 3 out of 10. I mean, it's never nice to lose. But
again, the only concern here for me is that people still think that Shumpert is a good defender because he's not. And it does have an effect, right? Because the fact that he got subbed in for an important possession to defend is a direct result of people thinking that he's a good defender.
Well, so who is it that thinks that? It has to be somebody on the Cavs.
I mean, the team clearly does. And some people still do. I mean, even if you look at on Reddit or in other places or even on Twitter sometimes, like people are catching on to it. But
We always see stupid stuff on Reddit and Twitter, and that's.
But sometimes that's the prevailing opinion, and I think it affects the perception of players around the league too. Like, it is what it is. Like, if everyone says something is true, like people, you know, it'll start to create doubts in their mind every time
No, I totally agree.
Confirmation bias kicks in. So every time you see him like swiping at the ball and getting a steal, you're like, oh yeah, he's a good defender. Sure.
Yeah. Do you think Shumpert will be part of the playoff rotation?
Yeah, like 5-10 minutes maybe. If JR is healthy, just spot.
But if JR is healthy, the guards I would like to see come off the bench are Korver and Williams. So like where is Shumpert? I guess he could play some small forward.
Play minutes, but 5-10 minutes is nothing, right? Like I mean, I think Mo Williams got minutes in the finals, so.
So you would expect Jefferson to basically have 0 minutes.
Richard Jefferson?
Yeah.
No, I'd actually play him over Shumpert, to be honest with you. He hasn't been great this season, but one thing I've noticed is he's actually making a lot more of his three since the All-Star break. And he's always been a good three-point shooter, so it's not like something that this is a small sample size for him. In fact, the first half of the season was the small sample size. So honestly, with Jefferson, my guess would have been that he just didn't have his legs and was sort of out of shape when he came into the season, which is fine because he's a 37-year-old. So I wouldn't expect him to go hard in the offseason.
It's interesting you should mention this. I tweeted today that he was looking particularly spry tonight, which is really even good.
And you missed the last game. He was actually really good in the last game.
Yeah. Okay. So
he
that's
started actually. So they didn't start Fry. They started Jefferson in that game. And I think they should continue to either start Jefferson or Korver, because Fry is not getting it done either.
So okay. I want to litigate this further. So the Cavs' starting lineup in the perfect world in the playoffs is Irving, JR, Kevin Love, LeBron James. Interesting. So I was like, who's our small forward? Right. Yeah. LeBron James and Tristan Thompson. Okay. So that's the five. And then I don't expect them to go more than nine deep. So you've got Korver. And then
I think Derek Williams will get minutes.
Okay. That's seven.
I think Darren Williams will get minutes.
Yeah. That's eight.
And then Fry. I think Richard Jefferson. No, I don't think Fry will get that many minutes. Maybe like five.
Okay.
When I say nine deep, I think we're talking about like 15 plus minutes. All
right. Right.
Or 20 plus minutes or whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, remember in the finals, I mean, the Cavs had games where they only played eight players. Like, you know,
I mean,
nine
I think
is finals, already giving one
in
more.
In the Eastern Conference, I think they'll definitely go more than
sure. Eight, yes, of course. Yes.
But yeah, in the finals, maybe we don't play. I think it'll depend on how everyone looks by then.
Right. Yeah. Well, hopefully they're all healthy.
Someone might be injured, and who knows? Yeah.
So we got a couple questions that I think we should address.
Sure, let's do them, yeah.
So they were both sort of directly or indirectly related to Darren Williams and Andrew Bogut, who I don't think we've mentioned Andrew Bogut. Yeah, so there's a rumor today or yesterday. The Cavs are going to sign Andrew Bogut.
And they cut Jordan McRae today.
Yeah, they actually cut Jordan McRae. I'm not sure. There's some technical reason why they haven't signed him yet. Do you know what it is?
To sign Bogut?
Yeah. Do they need to give him a physical or something? Or
No. The reason they haven't signed him is... So the thing is, every day you don't sign him, it gets like $30,000 cheaper. So there's no point in signing him before a game. Like, you know, when
really?
You have
is
a couple
that,
of
is
days.
Is that what's going on there?
Yeah. Yeah, that's so awesome. Like, I think one of the guys from The Vertical tweeted out, like, depending on when you sign him, it gets like $30,000 cheaper. It's actually kind of ridiculous. Because, you know, we have a lot of luxury tax to pay, so.
Yeah, but wouldn't that annoy him?
He doesn't seem to care, so whatever. And he's already making his money because he already got waived, right?
Oh,
so
he got bought out. I guess he'll make more. Did he get bought out or did he get waived?
He got waived, I'm
pretty sure. Some combination there.
Yeah.
Okay, well, in any case, we're going to have Andrew Bogut. And what I saw is that he may be ready to play. The Cavs play on Saturday.
They play Saturday next?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they don't.
That's
tomorrow's
good.
Friday.
2 days off.
What day is today? No, I'm sorry. I'm wrong. They play Friday.
Okay.
And it might be a back-to-back. Yeah, they play Friday and Saturday. They play
the
Friday
Hawks
at Atlanta and Saturday at Miami.
No. Both are at home. No, sorry.
Both
you're right.
Both are away.
Both are away. Sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think what I saw was that Bogut could play Saturday, as soon as Saturday. I'm not sure why they wouldn't sign him
that too.
Tomorrow. Well, in any case, so how do you feel about Andrew Bogut?
I feel better about Darren Williams. I feel more excited about Darren Williams signing. But Andrew Bogut, again, like in the regular season, if he can eat up like 15 or 20 minutes for Tristan, and while Kevin Love is out, I think that's good. He's still a really good shot blocker. I mean, he has deteriorated in a lot of other departments, but a lot of it's also effort. He was playing on a really bad team, and like if you just watch him play, I caught some Mavericks games, and like he just wouldn't even try moving off the ball. Sometimes he wouldn't even go for rebounds and stuff like that. But defensively, he was still really good. I mean, he's still blocking shots.
Yes.
Defensive RPM still pretty good. His defensive.
Do you know what his defensive RPM is?
It's like four or something, right? And then his offensive was like negative three.
He's the third best defensive player in the NBA by RPM this year.
Right, and then his offensive is like -4 or something ridiculous too. So
yeah, so over the past four seasons, Bogut is ranked 5th, 2nd, 1st, and 3rd this year in defensive RPM. Let me just read what this guy said in his email to us, because I thought it was pretty interesting. So in the past four seasons, Bogut is ranked 5th, 2nd, 1st, and 3rd in defensive RPM among all NBA players. And then this guy wanted to compare him to Larry Sanders, who also had sort of a fairly elite defensive RPM. It's sort of moot now since we got Bogut and Sanders will maybe sign with someone else. But yeah, like, how much do you believe that Bogut is that impactful on defense?
It depends on the matchup, right? Like, if you're playing a team that has bigs that can shoot, like, he's not going to get out on those screens, right? So if someone like, let's say, Kevin Love sets a screen and yeah. Kevin is playing the five and he pops out, like, Bogut's not going to go out there to contest that shot, right? So against those lineups, he'll be pretty bad because there's no reason for him to be on the floor. But against pretty much any other lineup where, like, you have attacking guards who like to go to the rim, he'll block them pretty well. He's really good at blocking shots.
Okay.
And he's still a smart guy, so.
So in baseball, what you'll see is somebody might be really good hitting against left-handed pitching. And so if there's ever a right-handed pitcher starting that day, you don't play that guy because you know he's going to do badly against right-handed.
I think it's a situational thing here, too.
So you think his coaches for the last 4 years have basically perfectly deployed him in situations where he won't fail?
I mean, if you look at the finals 2 years ago, right, in 2014-15,
yeah.
When we lost in 6, he basically didn't play him after the third game, right?
Right.
Like, they figured out pretty quickly that we were attacking him, and and he had to get out on the screens. So, yeah, he just didn't play. Last year, too, I mean, he was barely playing 13 minutes or so.
So I agree with you. I agree that I think the reason why his defensive RPM is so high is that the coaches he's had have been smart enough to only use him in situations where he would maximally shine. But I just think that's sort of interesting that they've been able to get him to a point where, like, he's essentially over the last 4 years the best defensive player in the NBA. For the minutes that he's on the court. Now, he plays far fewer minutes than other guys who are better, but the minutes he's been on the court, there's no one who's been more effective defensively.
Also, to be fair, he was a lot more mobile like 2 years ago, so I don't think it was as situational as it is now. Like,
but even this year, his defensive RPM is 3rd in the league.
Oh yeah, but I think it's very few minutes, right? And he was injured for most of the game.
Yeah.
So I think at that point, the prior is very important, and his prior has always been good. So,
yeah. Okay. And then the other thing about Bogut is he is almost as bad offensively as he is awesome defensively.
Right. It might be less of a problem on this team where there's a lot of spacing. So if you look at the Mavericks, who are the shooters on that team, right? Like, Harrison Barnes is an okay shooter. Dirk is obviously a good shooter, and everyone else can't really shoot, right?
Right.
So there just wasn't a lot of spacing. I mean, and if you look at, like, Nate Duncan talk about him, he always chastises effort. He was like, oh, Bogut's basically stopped trying in the regular season, which is fine. I mean, he's injured all the time. He's old. He was on a bad team, I understand. On our team, I would imagine effort shouldn't be a problem. And if it is, he'll probably get benched. So we'll have to see. I mean, if he just has to dunk, it's not that hard.
Yeah, I mean, if he just stands under the hoop, that's fine. You don't want him... I suspect that one of the reasons why his offensive RPM is so bad is that he's unable to move away from the hoop. And so the other players on his team, which in our case would probably be LeBron James or Kyrie Irving, who try to drive to the hoop, have to basically get around their own guy as well.
But one thing I should mention is he sort of negates that partially by having a good offensive rebounding percentage. So this season he's at 10.9%, which is really high for offensive rebound.
That's good. Okay, so even if he clogs it up and, you know, LeBron misses, you know, a contested layup, Bogut can grab the rebound and dunk it home or something.
For reference, Tristan's at 14%, so he's only 4% below, like, the second or third best offensive rebounder in the league. Also, one thing I should mention is one of the reasons why his offensive RPM is so low is because his turnover rate is really high. Can you guess his turnover percentage this season?
Tristan's or Bogut's? I can't guess either.
Bogut's.
Is it bad?
It's 33%. 33% of the possessions that he's using, he's turning the ball over in. So you have to imagine they'll take the ball out of his hands. So that should help.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you don't want him dribbling around.
but he also likes to stand at the top of the key and like does kind of what LeBron does now. But we have LeBron, so he's going to be doing that. There's no reason for Boga to be doing that.
Okay. Okay. So now that another question we got was, now that we have Deron Williams and Andrew Bogut, how do you feel that affects the Cavs' overall title chances?
It depends. So let's look at two instances, one where we get them and one where we don't get them. Mm-hmm. In the one where, and in both of them, let's say if I know for a fact everyone is healthy and fresh going into the finals, then I don't think it would make a difference. But since we don't know that, and I think reducing minutes on LeBron and on Kyrie, on Kevin, on Tristan is very important. So I think it will really help having these guys as a sponge for those minutes, essentially.
Yeah, I generally agree with that analysis. So,
I mean, Deron, for example, played 23 minutes tonight, right? Someone like RJ would have had to play extra minutes tonight, right, if it wasn't for Deron. And like, yeah, while Deron wasn't great, he still was a +4, which means the team wasn't getting killed in the minutes he was in. At least it means that. So.
Yeah. Okay. So the Cavs are, and I don't think these, I think I checked these last night before the Kevin Durant injury, which we should also talk about. But yeah, so the Warriors are 5-11 to win the finals, and the Cavs are 3-1. So the Warriors are still pretty heavily favored, even after the Durant news.
Well, because the news essentially stated that it's a 4-week reevaluation, which means they'll have 9 games when he gets reevaluated. And then after that, I assume if everything goes well, so like everything is tip-top shape, then he'll probably be out another week or so, you know, just sort of get his conditioning back up. And then, so which means he'll probably come back in, if everything goes well, he'll come back in maybe 3 games before the regular season ends. And that's more than enough for them to get him back into the flow. And then, because he's always been a good shooter.
I suppose.
But I mean, if you look at the first round matchup, who are they going to play? Denver?
No, I understand all that. I don't know the Warriors intimately enough to know for sure how much this cost them. But I do know the Cavs well. And I know that when Love got hurt, the main reason I was bummed was that I felt like he was just starting to get to a point offensively where the Cavs were sort of unlocking a secret where he was getting more efficient. And by getting hurt, I worry that the Cavs are going to fall back into old habits where they're not using him most efficiently. And yeah, I mean, I think he'll be back and he'll have enough time to get his, like, you know, quote unquote legs underneath him, but they're not going to get the sort of hyper synergies that develop only with playing time and practice. And so, yeah, that's why I was bummed about that. And with Durant's only been on that team for half a season. And yeah, I wonder if it's going to cost them some, you know, gelling time by having, I mean, look, it will. It's just, I'm not sure how much that matters.
Right. But if I'm pretty sure they can get through at least their first and second rounds, even without him, if they need to.
And like, I do too. I don't think,
because he's still,
I still think they're going to make the finals. Yeah. Would you favor, we talked about this a little bit last night, but I think it was an interesting discussion. If Kevin Durant is out for the rest of the season, would you favor the Cavs in the finals, in a hypothetical finals matchup?
I think I would, yeah. I think I would, but only barely because of...
Yeah, like 55% or something, right?
Because of home court. I think if we had home court, I'd definitely favor us like higher. I think home court is like, I think we looked at this last time, it's like a 15 to 20% swing.
It matters, yeah.
Which makes it even more incredible that we won last year because we did not have home court.
It's like 3 points of SRS.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big difference. Okay, yeah, I think I would favor the Cavs in that situation, but it'd be pretty marginal. So Vegas has the Cavs at 3-1. Do you think that's about right?
Yeah, unless we hear more about Durant's injury and or if there's a setback, I think that's fair. There's no reason for us to think that he won't be back before the finals. So.
I think given the uncertainty about Durant, I think it's a little bit better. I think it's like 2.5-1.
Sure.
You know, yeah. 5-2 or whatever.
And obviously that'll improve as we progress through the playoffs, as we start beating teams. So,
yeah. So, okay. So Kyle Lowry is also hurt. I was out of the country when he got hurt. What happened?
So he was actually hurt before the All-Star game. But for some reason, even though he was hurt, he ended up playing in the All-Star game. And he played heavy minutes, I remember.
I think he played
25, 30 minutes or something ridiculous. And he competed in the three-point shooting competition. While his wrist was hurt, his shooting wrist specifically.
That's really poorly managed.
That is really shitty, honestly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There was no reason he should have been out there.
What a bummer for Raptors fans. But he's supposed to be back in enough time?
Yeah. But I mean, again, like this guy has dropped off shooting-wise every single playoff. And a lot of it is because he's usually injured by then. Or at least he has a lot of bumps and bruises. So
it seems to be
going down the same path again. So.
Yeah, I guess the silver lining for Raptors fans could be that, yeah, maybe this is a sort of artificial way to get him some extra rest.
Sucks for us, though, because they'll probably be a 4 seed now because they're not going to play well without him. Which means we'll have to play them in the second round, which isn't ideal.
So we'll have to go through both Boston and Toronto.
If Boston makes it to the Eastern Conference, maybe Washington beats them. Washington's playing pretty well, too.
They are.
They won tonight. They beat Golden State last night.
Yeah, I saw. Yeah, Washington was up big, right?
They were blowing them out until the end, but even then, I think it only got close because of garbage time.
Right. Yeah, the Timberwolves are beating the Jazz by 30 at the end of the fourth. Crazy. Okay, so yeah, I guess I don't know. I don't know how I feel about the Warriors' current situation. If I were a Warriors fan, I would be a little bit uneasy, but I would still like my position. I think they're still.
Yeah, I mean, it's way worse for them than it was 2 days ago, but
they're still the best team of all time.
It's not
by
done,
a point differential.
Right?
So
yeah, and and they still have three All-Star players. So
right,
I'm sure they'll be fine in the regular season. The question though is, do you think the Spurs can overtake them? Spurs are only 4 games behind, if I remember correctly, and they won tonight, so.
Yes, I do. I've been so disappointed by the Spurs the last 2 years to not even get to play the Warriors in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I've talked to you about this offline. I feel like Greg Popovich deserves a little bit of criticism for that. I mean, the Spurs have been dynamite during the regular season the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But now twice, 2 years in a row, and they've been relatively healthy come playoff time. They've 2 years in a row, they've lost before they got to the Warriors, which is really unimpressive. And I think Popovich should get some flack for that. But in any case, and because of that, it makes me a little bit bearish on their playoff prospects.
Well, we're talking about the regular season where they've been excellent. So I'm saying, do you think they could overtake them as the first seed?
Yeah, but I think the odds are about the same as the Celtics overtaking the Cavs.
Yeah,
20%, 25%, something like that. The Warriors are awfully good. And, for the 20 shots that Durant takes every day, if they can give 6 to Curry, 6 to Klay, and, 6
Draymond,
to
Nikki, whatever. They have some good players still.
Yeah, they're going to be okay. Yeah. I wanted to talk about RPM a little bit. So the latest RPM came out on Monday, and a couple interesting developments. LeBron James is now the third best player in the NBA by RPM. Chris Paul is still number one, but he's only played 38 games, and his RPM, even in the 3 games he's played since the All-Star break, has come down almost an entire point. So I'll be curious to see. He might be far enough ahead that nobody will pass him, but because of his games played, he's not really sort of eligible in my mind to be considered the RPM winner this year. And LeBron is awfully close to Butler. Do you think LeBron will finish this regular season in second or first place in RPM?
It depends if he can get his turnovers down. So I think we talked about this, his wrap-em, which is the regularized adjusted plus minus, which is mostly looking at how the team does when he's on the floor and has no box score component, is really good this season. So I actually looked this up and he's number one in that.
Did you look that up? Yeah, we were talking about it.
And
you looked it up. Okay.
Yeah, it's actually number one.
He's better than Paul?
Yeah, he's better than everyone. Because, I mean, the team just doesn't do that well. They're like minus four without him or something ridiculous. Yeah. But the reason his RPM hasn't been, you know, number one in the league is because his box score prior isn't that good. And it's, again, if you go through...
He's a turnover factory.
Exactly. So he's a turnover factory, essentially. Which, like, yeah. A lot of them are lazy and don't really bother me, per se. Because I know they'll be fine come playoff time. But it's sort of annoying to see in real time. Like, you saw some of his passes in the first quarter, right? He was just being lazy there.
Yeah. I agree that the turnovers are probably the thing that's the biggest weight on his RPM this year. But, I mean, he's also...
Everything else is really good. You go through one.
He's averaging more assists than he's ever averaged in his career. Right. They sit on the broad
60 plus.
Right. He's shooting the second highest he ever has from three this season. And so he's got some other things going for him.
Exactly.
I think he's going to finish first in RPM.
I think it'll be awfully close, if not first. I think, and then since RPM includes playoffs, I think by the end of the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. That's lame. I meant at the end of the regular season.
I think it'll be one or two. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. That's pretty rad. Okay, so I think I know what you think about this. So if you look at RPM wins, I think LeBron James is third. Yeah, so James Harden has 12.78 RPM wins. Russell Westbrook has 12.70. LeBron James has 12.68. And those are the top three. Fourth is Lowry at 12.39. Do you think... LeBron James is the league MVP this year.
Will he get it or do I think he should get it?
No, do I think he should? Do you think he should?
We'll have to see how this... I think it's awfully close right now between those three. Like, you could give it to any of them and I wouldn't blink an eye. I'd be perfectly fine with it. So I think we'll have to see how this season ends. Like, I can't give you an answer right now. Let's put it that way. Okay.
I think LeBron James is the MVP. I think he's having...
Yeah, I have no issues with that.
It's tough not giving it to Harden and Westbrook, but my prior...
I think it'll be Westbrook, to be honest with you. Just
really?
Because
what if they're like seventh in the West or something?
But you got to look at his on-off numbers. It's ridiculous. They're like a plus 17 with him versus when he's off the floor. And apparently his like crunch time numbers have been ridiculously good this season. You know, the thing that's been a problem for him in the past? He's essentially overcome that this season. So, like last night, I was watching this game. I think it was, OKC versus Jazz. And OKC was down like four with like a minute left or something. And he hit a ridiculous three, then got a ridiculous rebound for like a 7-footer.
Yeah. I saw it. I watched the last 2 minutes of that game.
Oh, yeah. Ran out in transition and then got a nice and one and then essentially sealed the game there. He's been really good in crunch time this season.
He's also doing something sort of unusual statistically. Which is he's averaging a triple-double.
He's padding some stats, but like his rebounding padding doesn't really hurt them, so it's whatever. I don't really care. Unless you're doing something that's hurting your team just for the sake of stats, then I have a problem. But if you're padding your stats and you're not hurting your team, do whatever you need to do to improve your image in the league. That's fine with me.
Do you think that he's going to average an RPM? Or an RPM? A triple-double?
Yeah. He only needs like 8.3 or not. And 9 assists or something for the rest of the regular season.
ESPN had a thing.
I think it was like 8.7 and 9.3 or something. He'll get it.
Wow. Yeah. They now say he has an 81% chance of averaging a triple-double. So yeah. Exactly. Okay. I think he will. 81%. Wow. That's really incredible. I never thought... if you would have asked me before the season, what are the chances that somebody in the NBA over the next 10 years averages a triple-double, I would have said like 5%.
I mean, it's one person out of, you know, however many have played. So it is still really hard. Just because he did it doesn't mean.
Right. And when Oscar Robertson did it, it was like, the teams were scoring 150 points per game.
Exactly.
Like it was
like the pace was really high. He played like 46 minutes or something ridiculous a night.
Right.
To his credit, is a tough thing to do. But
yeah, I don't want to like disparage it too much, but. I am disparaging it a little bit. Like it was a different era with sort of different stuff going on. Like it, for example, that is not anywhere close to the best NBA season ever had.
Right.
It's probably top 20, but it's not top five. So, the other RPM thingy I wanted to talk about is that Kyrie Irving has climbed into the top 10 of point guards. I think he's He's eighth. Number 10. He's number 10, right, and he's eighth in RPM wins, which is not bad.
Yeah. And if you can, if you expect to see a bump in playoffs as we have the last couple of years, I think he'll be fine. He'll be as good as he always has.
He's going to get hurt today. He was minus 11, and Darren Williams was plus 4.
He was good, though.
I know. I think more I know he was, but RPM doesn't
And he wasn't
know
even
that.
Guarding Isaiah, so I can't actually disparage him for that. But
yeah, he was fine on Avery Bradley. His defense tonight was fine. I don't have anything bad to say about Kyrie Irving, except for that.
In the end, I wish he didn't try to go one-on-one with Avery Bradley. Like, Avery Bradley isn't that good of a help defender, but he's really good in one-on-one situations.
That second-to-last possession, you mean?
Yeah. Like, Kyrie still got a pretty decent shot for him, to be honest with you, but I would have liked to see him try to get Kyle Korver an open three.
Yeah, I didn't like the 12 seconds of dribbling, but look, we're nitpicking here, right? The possession before was sublime. The possession before that was also really good.
Yeah. I think the biggest problem tonight was Shumpert was terrible for the 23 minutes he played. And even LeBron, let's be honest, for the first three quarters was not that good. Like, he was sort of dribbling around. He had, how many turnovers did he have in the end?
Just, that's in quotes, 4.
Wow, he only had 4 in the beginning, like in the first half. So he had 0 turnovers at the second half.
Yes.
That's good.
He was sort of disengaged in the second half. He finished 10 of 21, which is one of his not so great shooting nights.
He had a 75 true shooting percentage, I think, in the month of Feb or something ridiculous.
I don't understand how this is happening, but
he shot 50% from 3 tonight, right?
3 of 6, yeah. His minutes load is preposterous, and he's playing, you know, in some senses better than he ever has. It's really confusing. Like, you wonder what he's going to look like in the playoffs.
Yeah. I think, the turnovers are really the only thing that I'm concerned about, but it's not that big of a concern because I've seen him cut him down in playoff situations. Like, if you look at his turnover percentage. Yeah, and it's not
like, if he can get it down one turnover a game, like, that would basically.
Yeah, 3 versus 4 is a huge difference, yeah.
Yeah, that's. You know, 2 points a game, basically. Right.
Two points a game is a lot. So if you think about, like, RPM getting bumped by 2, that's like going from, you know, number 10 to number 2 or something ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah. That's all I had on my list of stuff to talk about. Did you have anything else you wanted to chat about?
What would you do with Shumpert for the rest of the season, for the rest of the regular season at least? Would you just keep playing him no matter how bad he is?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I would like to see him continue to start for now. And boy, yeah, I'm not sure. I need to watch specifically him a little bit better. Because the problem is not his man-on-man defense. It's that he gets lost on screens.
and like, he just isn't that smart anymore. I think seems like an effort thing sometimes because, like, he's always disengaged. But I think the fact that he's been bad on offense is really getting to him.
Do you think that getting JR back will help just because they're close and maybe that can...
Yeah, maybe he just needs someone to talk to. Who knows? I think, oh...
Because he's sort of an odd person.
Did I tell you this? Apparently on Snapchat... The day after, or actually a few hours after trade deadline, he posted something which was extremely, like, emo. And he sounded really pissed.
Like, he was happy he wasn't traded or something?
Not happy that he was traded. He was just like, oh, people don't appreciate you, et cetera, et cetera. So I think he was really mad about the fact that he was in trade talks.
Huh.
Which may have gotten to him.
Which is kind
of disappointing because he was shooting decently well before.
Playing psychologist on these guys is a little bit tricky.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to... Again, I'm not saying that's a reason. I'm just sort of speculating here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, look, it probably is a little bit insulting to be in trade rumors when you feel like you're part of the fabric of the team.
And just, like, look at his splits pre-All-Star break and post-All-Star break, or pre-trade deadline and post-trade deadline. They're pretty... He's shooting, like, 20% or something since then.
Yeah. I wonder if something's going on personally, or
I don't know.
Who knows? Well, anyway,
Channing Frye not playing well because, like, he's had debts in his family, I think both his mother and father passed away this season.
Yeah, so. Within a couple of weeks of each other, I think.
Right. And he seems frustrated too on the court every time he makes a mistake. So I understand with him, but like at least with Shumpert, I mean, he hasn't been injured this season. In theory, he shouldn't be this bad.
Yeah, I agree, and it's disappointing. The question is, so for example, just by analogy, so last year Irving came back from his knee injury, and he was freaking terrible the entire regular season. I mean, he was awful.
Bad. He shot 31% from three.
And you know, we talked about it a lot on this show and on Twitter, and you know, talked about the possibility of, you know, starting Delly and, you know, these kinds of things. But even though he was so bad, the whole time you and I said, no, you got to stick with Irving because his ceiling is higher. And, you know, you got to find out if you can get him back to what he can be. And so the Cavs did. They stuck with Irving and they kept starting him. And then the playoffs happened and he was outstanding. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if they should give Shumpert that same luxury and same, you know, confidence and leash, but one could argue that, you know, Shumpert is just slumping right now, and if you relegate him to the end of the bench, then he's never really going to get back to what his true talent level is, right? And that would be a mistake. So I don't know what I really think Shumpert's true talent level. He's been so up and down, and it's hard to know, but right. I think the regular season is basically just a huge warm-up for the playoffs, and I think the Cavs should, and in light of that, I think the Cavs should rest James more, they should rest Irving more, they should experiment with various lineups, and probably give Shumpert enough minutes to figure out if he's slumping or if he just isn't very good anymore. But I think the Cavs should be willing to lose like half of their games going forward, because I don't think home court matters in the East. So, yeah, if you think that it's okay to play LeBron James 38 minutes to try to win games, then you probably also think that Shumpert should not be playing as much. So, you know.
Yeah, I think one caveat, though, there's the reason you want to give Kyrie that luxury is because his ceiling is really high. And this team isn't really going anywhere without him playing at his peak, essentially. With Shumpert, I mean, we need him, kind of. But, like, if he doesn't play that well, I'd rather just not have the negative presence on the court, to be quite honest with you. But, again, like you said, regular season doesn't matter. So let's try to get him back into rhythm as much as we can and don't destroy his confidence. But if come playoff time he's doing the same thing, you can glue his butt to the bench.
Yeah, I mean, look, if we somehow get down 1-1 in a series in the East, like, experimentation time is over.
Yeah, like, play your top eight guys and call it a day.
Right. This question may answer itself. I mean, if JR comes back and he's even half of what he was last season, it'll be obvious that he should start. And then you have this logjam of, like, Korver and Williams and Jefferson and Shumpert, and you got to pick... And yeah, to some extent, the Deron Williams as well. So you got to pick like two of those five guys to soak up the 10 minutes that JR doesn't play. And, you know.
Yeah, I think Korver definitely has to play.
I think so too. So then you're down to like almost no minutes between Shumpert and Jefferson and, you know, whatever, the peanut gallery out there. So yeah, I think this is if everyone's healthy, it's going to answer it. It's going to answer itself. If JR is not healthy or if he's not himself, then you'll need more out of Shumpert, but we'll have to see.
Right. With Jefferson, like, even though he hasn't been great, whenever you watch him, you don't feel like he is burning possessions, if that makes sense. Like, he'll pass it off as soon as he knows he doesn't have a shot or a lane to drive. Whereas with Shumpert, he'll dribble around, he'll try to do something fancy, and then he'll pass it off either with, like, you know, 5 seconds left, or he'll turn it over, he'll try to do some crazy step back, which he'll miss.
Shumpert is frustrating on offense because he thinks he's a little bit better than he is. So, you know, he'll do that double crossover thing he does all the time. And if he doesn't turn it over, then he'll take a, you know, a jumper that never really has... Look, I think he is a better shooter than this, and generally his offense has been okay, but just the last 2 months it's been so bad, and it's cringeworthy to watch because it just you can see it 7 seconds.
It's just seven seconds
before it happens, you know, like, it's you're going to get a low percentage opportunity out of it, and it's, as a fan, it's just frustrating to watch.
So. It has always been. Let me ask you another question here. would you rather have, okay, what's more valuable to you if you're trying to win a title? A guy who can create his own shot, but he's not incredibly good at it. Like, he can get like league average efficiency, but he can do it in a high usage. So he can, you know, average like 25, 27 points a game, but he won't be that efficient at doing that. Or someone who's sort of a spot player, but can average like 17, 16, 17 points a game. Again, a complementary role player, but he's very efficient at it, like 65, 66 true shooting percentage. What do you, which of those two do you think is a more valuable piece for a contender? For someone that's trying to win the championship, not for like someone that's trying to get the third seed or the fourth seed, et cetera.
Yeah, I think the latter, just because it's... I know that points late in games are more valuable than points early in games, but right. It's not so much that points early in games are worthless.
And like points early in games put you in position to be able to be in that game where at the end of the game you can at least tie or take the lead or something.
Yeah, I mean, you need guys that can score at a reasonable rate in a high volume situation. And the Cavs already have two of those in Irving and James. In fact, they score at a much better than reasonable rate. So they don't really need a guy that can do that. But yeah, hypothetically, I want the guy that can.
Yeah, I just don't think you can build a contender on a guy who's not that efficient, but is taking up a high usage and not a good passer. If he's a good passer like Westbrook, I think you can overcome the efficiency problems. But if he's not a good passer, he better be a damn efficient offensive player. Otherwise, you're just not going to be very good on offense with him. So yeah. Just look at all the teams that have won the championship. I mean, they've all been, you know, centered around LeBron, who's obviously very efficient.
Right. They have some hyper-efficient
Steph,
guy.
Exactly. Kawhi the year before that. Dirk Nowitzki 2011. Just look at any of them.
The only one I could think of, and they didn't win, is those 2001 76ers with Iverson. He was fairly inefficient and super high volume, but he could
OT.
Right. And he can pass. He could pass. And he was such an odd, he's almost like the exception that proves the rule there. He was such an odd.
And to be fair, like the league-wide O rating was sort of lower back then. So it was okay if you weren't that efficient, but now there's just no way you're going to win anything unless you're hyper-efficient on O. So I think for my high-usage guys, I would only want hyper-efficient guys surrounded by complementary role players that are really good at what they do. So I think those guys are more valuable than someone like DeRozan, who can, you know, score a lot, but just not do it at a great efficiency.
I mean, I know you agree on this. I don't want anything to do with DeRozan. He's so mediocre efficient on offense.
It's a complete mirage, his offensive game, I think.
He's not even... Yeah, so he's the 24th best shooting guard overall by RPM.
What about offensive RPM?
His ORPM is decent. It's 2.36. Let me see where that ranks with shooting guards. He's the eighth best shooting guard.
Right. Offensive RPM. Yeah, I mean, as you would expect, he's better on offense than he's on defense.
Yeah.
And there is value again to shot creation. Don't get me wrong there. I just want my main guy who has a high usage to be efficient. That's it. And there's very few of those. So there's nothing wrong with being DeRozan. It's just, I don't think you can build a contender on a high usage guy who's not efficient.
That makes sense. How did Lou Williams get to the Rockets?
They gave up a first rounder to the Lakers. Yeah.
Wow. Is it this coming year's first rounder?
I think so.
Interesting.
Yeah, pretty sure. It's a late
first.
Williams has been efficient this season. 60-plus true shooting.
He's the second best shooting guard by offensive RPM.
Right, exactly.
I wanted to talk about... Well, we can end here, but I kind of wanted to talk about the two deadline trends, the Nerlens Noel
trade.
Yeah,
we can go through it quickly if you want. Yeah.
Okay. So Nerlens Noel was traded from the 76ers to the Mavericks? No.
Yeah.
To the Mavericks. It was traded. He was traded for a first round draft pick, but that first round draft pick is not going to convey.
It's not conveying. So it's two second round, future second round draft picks.
Right.
plus Justin Anderson.
Right. I'm so-so on Justin Anderson. It's interesting that, I mean, Noel's a free agent, right?
He's a restricted free agent upcoming, yeah.
So he's going to be expensive. Yet. He's going to be expensive.
So my initial reaction was that Nerlens Noel, you know, is a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. And, like, you could get more than that. But then I sort of settled down and I looked at it the next day. And then once you go through the details, so he's been injured a lot, right? I think he's missed half of his games that he's played.
He did not play coach's decisions, too.
Right, exactly. So he has some, like, effort or whatever problems with the coach. And then on top of that, he's missed a lot of games because of injury.
Yep.
Because of knee injuries, which...
Well, he missed his entire rookie year due to an ACL tear.
Right. So knee injuries in general are pretty bad for big men. So you want to stray away from those. And on top of that, he is going to be a restricted free agent and he's going to demand at least like $17 million. And for them, because he couldn't play power forward, he would be a backup center to Joel Embiid.
Right.
So he wasn't that valuable to them. I'm sure they tried to get more out of him, but yeah, I understand why his value wasn't as high as I initially expected it to be.
I mean, I totally agree. It was the league's worst kept secret that he was available. And the problem is...
Exactly,
The problem is he will be a restricted free agent and some team will offer him a lot of money. So the Mavericks will have the decision, like, do we want to match this and have a player who's on a contract that is basically not even tradable because he's so overpaid?
And Justin Anderson, semi-interesting. Like, he's a strong wing who can defend. Those guys have value in the league.
The Sixers just need NBA players, and Anderson is one of them. So
yeah,
that helps them. The Sixers are just generally hosed. I think Embiid is done. I've been bearish on Embiid from the start.
If he doesn't come back next season, I mean,
it's nice that he was really good, but you know, Greg Oden was really good. But if you can't stay on the court, then it's not helpful.
He had foot injuries that kept him out for 2 years and then a meniscus tear this season.
Back injury too. Remember he broke his back. What? There was the stress. He had a stress fracture in his back and then he broke his foot. And then did he break his foot again?
I think it was just a complication or something.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, that's those three things are all terrible for Pittman.
Yeah, his back injury was before the NBA. That's right.
Yeah. The Cavs discovered it, I think. Okay, so that's trade one. Trade two, Boogie Cousins for... well, that doesn't even matter. Buddy Hield and the two other guys, right?
Tyreke Evans and Omri Caspi.
Right. That's interesting. Wait,
sorry,
no,
Omri Caspi,
yeah, right. Tyreke Evans goes back to the Kings, which is who he was drafted by, I think.
Exactly.
And then, yeah.
Buddy Hield goes to the Kings, and then they get, I think they got one first rounder out of him, one late first rounder.
And so Boogie appears to want the money because he was willing to re-sign with the Kings, so I'm sure he'll re-sign with the Pelicans if the Pelicans
But the problem is he can't get that... That Supermax anymore because you can only get it with the team that drafted you.
That's a bummer.
Yeah. So that's why his agent kept leaking that he wasn't going to re-sign with any team because he wanted that trade.
All he wanted was the money.
He wanted that money and then he would force a trade after that. It is a lot of money. It's he lost $30 million over 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a lot of money. Maybe he should have checked his attitude at the door then.
Right. So I think, and then at that point, it's like you have to think about what his value is. I mean, I thought it was definitely more than what they got out of him. And I wish they had done a better job of negotiating / taking their time. But then again, like if apparently a lot of insiders were talking about this and his value was really low around the league because people were pretty worried about his technicals and also his attitude in the locker room. Apparently,
I've read that his own players like sort of dislike him.
Yeah, exactly. So apparently, do you know what's his face? Not Jimmer Fredette. Who's the guy they call Sauce Castillo?
Oh, who's on the Sixers now?
Yeah. Oh, Nick Stauskas. So when the Kings drafted Nick Stauskas, apparently he like hazed him a lot and he made him feel pretty bad. Huh. At least that's what the insiders, at least that's what Zach Lowe said. And I trust Zach Lowe's sources.
Yeah, I do too. In fact, yeah, Zach Lowe doesn't report stuff unless he has a source.
Right.
Yeah, look, I have like a little bit of insight on Boogie more than I do on other players because I've been to the Kings Arena the last 3 years to watch the Cavs play them there. And just watching him live is insane. Like he complains about every call. His body language is constantly terrible. And at the same time, he's so dominant on the court. Like his body control for his size is incredible. And
he might be stronger than LeBron, which is scary.
Yeah, you can see the potential, but you know, I don't know if they're going to be able to harness. And yeah, and he's not really the best combination because neither him nor Anthony Davis are outstanding 3-point shooters yet. So they have this like weird thing where they're both sort of okay at shooting threes,
and they're not that good. They're not good defensively either.
Yeah. Yeah, there. So, Davis looked like he was going to have more potential defensively than he's sort of grown into.
Same with Boogie too. Like I always thought he would be better defensively, but same. Boogie apparently has just been terrible effort-wise, according to Nate Duncan. So I haven't watched enough of the Kings to be honest with you, so I can't say much here. But
yeah.
Also,
I guess it was something for the Pelicans to try. I mean, there's no other way they were going to get another.
I think you do that trade like 9 times out of 10 because Buddy Hill isn't going to be anything. So
right.
Like Buddy Hill is 23 years old now. And
right. Yeah, he was a senior.
He obviously wasn't that good, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think they'll make the playoffs?
No, I don't. I know it's popular to say they will make the playoffs, but I already know that they've gone 1-3 since the trade. So it's easy for me to say, no, I don't think they will.
Also with the technicals, he's going to miss a game for every other technical now. And he missed one, I think, tonight.
I know. You know, he doesn't get paid when he gets suspended.
Right, right. That's a 182nd of his.
So if he likes money contract. So much, you'd think he'd not want to give up 1.25% every other.
That's a lot of money, man.
It's a ton of money. Yeah, it's like more than I make in a year. A lot more. He just needs to not.
At some point, you just have to mature, man. Like, when you get traded for Buddy Hield and one first rounder, like it's time to fix that.
Yeah, it is.
Can you imagine any other top 10 player getting traded or top 15 player, whatever you want to call him, getting traded for that package? I don't see it, right?
I don't either. No, I don't. I think it's just an interesting thing. I don't know how. I mean, the advanced analytics love Cousins. He's good. Yeah.
Advanced analytics, normal numbers. I mean, eye test, everything is fine on him. It's just his attitude, apparently. Yeah. Anyway, I think we should end this now.
Yeah. We've been going for a while. So, all right, I'm going to wrap it up here. So this has been episode 49. Yeah, 49 of analytics. You can email us. Cavalit, what did I say?
Analytics.
Oh, right. That's our future once we start taking over the world. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba, and we respond to everything we get there. So feel free. Thanks for listening, and go Cavs.